Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 1st, 2017, a day that I'm afraid will live in infamy. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good. And we're happy to be joined by a lawyer from Massachusetts, Ms. Fran McIntyre. How are you doing, Fran?
I'm just fine. Thanks, Ted.
So Fran has, full disclosure, is my sister, but that makes her a very smart person by default, and she knows a lot about law and legal issues. And she's also a principal on a different podcast, right? What's the name of the podcast that you are on, Fran?
Right. Thanks for the shout-out. My sisters and I are on the Sisters of Resistance podcast that comes out most Mondays, and occasionally we have a special edition if provoked enough. But Sisters of Resistance, you can find us on Stitcher and Facebook, and I think we even have a Twitter.
Everything, right? Yeah.
That's every place. Yep, all the usual places.
So without further ado, let's begin the Irish wake here. DR, I will leave it to you to put the awful news to our audience. And I'll just remind everyone, this is now Thursday afternoon, June 1st, about 3 hours after the criminal event happened. So, DR, what went on today?
Well, in a decision that former President Barack Obama, who's finally begun to criticize the current occupant of the White House, calls an absence of American leadership, which is a great statement. Trump announced Thursday that he's essentially ratifying a decision that was in effect made last November to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement. The reason why I say it ratifies that decision is that, as I've long argued, the moment Trump was declared the winner of the Electoral College, that effectively pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement. This just makes it official. Trump basically claimed that this hurts America and hurts jobs and the usual, you know, BS claims.
Yeah.
But again, it just goes to show you.
So what he said was that the United States will cease to participate in any of the operation of the Paris Accord. And I think, I mean, we talked last week about the meetings in Bonn where they're trying to work out the transparency, the reporting rules on carbon emissions, right? That the United States is just going to walk away from all that. But tell me, DR, remind me, what are the ground rules for the United States actually fully not having a seat at the table, to quote T-Rex?
Well, it's going to take 4 years to fully pull the United States out of the agreement, which means, I think there was one report in the New York Times that indicated that the 2020 presidential election will be the sort of the ultimate decider of whether the United States stays in or gets out. It's interesting that he did not decide to sort of yank out of the 1992 UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which would have taken only a year to extract the United States from. It is a point that ought to be made, and I think this point has to be reaffirmed, that from a certain perspective, it's Trump that made the decision, but from another perspective, it's the people who voted for Trump that made this decision, that they're the ones who are responsible. And the people who voted for Trump would have voted for anybody in that primary, whether it was Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush, at the direction of those voters, they too would have walked away from Paris. Number one, that has to be recognized. And number two, this reaffirms something that a point Bill Maher made several weeks ago. Damn anyone who claimed that there wasn't a dime's worth of difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, because this is an action that Hillary Clinton absolutely would not have taken.
Yes, I agree. I mean, I think yeah, I can't argue with any of that. I guess the question I have, and maybe Fran, I don't know if you know, but the sort of timeline that's laid out, there has to be a formal submission to the Paris, to the IPCC, not the IPCC, but the FCCC. And it seems to me that this 4-year clock has to begin in June of 2017, which means the next president, hopefully Hussein, would come in January of 2020 and have until June of 2020 to rectify things. Is that a fair reading?
Well, I don't know what the time frame is, and I don't know what the implications today, I believe, are his failure to ratify on or before June 1st. And so the failure to ratify, what follows on and what the consequences of that are, I'm not exactly sure of. Mm-hmm. But it was his failure to ratify today that I think
There was no timeline. I mean, we ratified this thing last November 4th. My understanding is that November 4th of last year, before the election, the thing got ratified. And now, and so it exists. And for the United States to begin the process of withdrawal has to be, I mean, there's no further thing the United States has to do to be part of it. So, you know, President Covfefe didn't do anything new today. He just said, we're out. He started, right? DR, is that, would you agree with that process, that statement?
Definitely. It's, you know, it's interesting to see the coverage, and let's leave aside for now the obvious point that it's about damn time that the press spiked its climate coverage. Would that they provided this level of coverage before the election took place. But in any event, it's interesting to see the reports of the numerous businesses, numerous world leaders condemning this decision and basically saying that the United States has decided to become an international pariah. And I've a friend who said that, you know, just as Lyndon Johnson said that, you know, there will be political consequences for the next 50 years as a result of the passage of the Civil Rights Act, will there be political consequences for the next 50 years as a result of this decision? That remains to be seen, obviously.
Well, see, I mean, when I heard it was that he quoted a report by an organization called the NERA, National Energy Research Associates or something, that basically said there was $1 trillion of costs associated with the first 10 years of the Paris Accord or something, and did not compute any benefits, right? So they had this one-sided calculation where it cost too much money and they walked away from it as just being sort of part and parcel of the deception and maybe self-deception these guys are engaged in. I don't know.
Well, it's going to take a considerable amount of unraveling to figure out what it is that's the effect of his statement today. Mm-hmm. But I just had a couple of observations. To me, it seems certainly more politics than science. His statement that he represented the people of Pittsburgh and not the people of Paris seemed to contribute nothing to this debate and this discussion. And then the other observation that I understood was he was basically calling it down for being a bad deal. Mm-hmm. And so that maybe, you know, he was going to withdraw and then maybe we could work out another deal, which seemed to me classic out of the deal. You know, you've got it already set up and then he comes and kicks the furniture to pieces and then stands back and waits for somebody to try to put it back together again. So,
He is.
I don't think he has the intellect to understand any of this. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really understand what he's doing. He's just operating on gut. All week long, is he going to, is he not going to? And there's so many other things he backed away from.
I was fully expecting that I would see a news report that said, oh, they canceled the press conference at 3 because, you know, he changed his mind.
I think that's what was so disappointing about it, is I held out hope until the last final minute. Diaz not wrong saying this was decided, you know, on November 9th, but still, you hope that that some of the greater angels, when you looked at the number of people who had directly gone after him, you know, when Exxon was asking that they stay in the agreement, that's what moved me. But you're right, DR, that only now is the press really beginning to get sort of a granular explanation of what this was all about. To hear the discussion on the TV about why it was a good thing to have a half a degree reduction be a good thing,
because
it would just usually reverse, which is something I didn't understand until a couple of days ago. So I wish I had some expectation or some trust that there was a greater analysis or understanding what was
behind this decision. I saw was that the people in Europe were saying after the G7 meeting that the European leaders were saying that Trump didn't understand what the Paris Accords was. Right? He just didn't know. Right? I mean, it's...
That's why he does so much listening, I think, because he doesn't have anything to say, so he has to listen. So he just sits around there and doesn't say anything. And that's why he's in the golf cart all the time, because he can't hang around with these guys because he doesn't have anything to say.
Right. He's just, oh, man. Well, I think that the, so I guess that what I want to get at, and DR, maybe you can tell me this. What do you think is kind of the, let's first of all start with the immediate effect of withdrawing from the Paris Accords? I mean, because Ed Markey was on the radio today saying, oh, you know, the clean energy economy is going to go downhill, basically. It's going to disappear. And you and I, and we've all made this argument that the clean energy technology and markets are too robust to be killed, right? Mm-hmm. And so how does it work out that if the United States backs out of the Paris Accords, does that kill all this energy, this momentum we see in the clean energy markets? I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, Obama's statement clearly indicates that he still thinks that clean energy will continue to move forward, and obviously there will be movement on the state and local level. But obviously, at least for the time being, there won't be any sort of federal force behind it. I think it may have been Bob Inglis or it may have been another commentator who observed that this is the biggest break possible, particularly for China and India, that China and India were just waiting for the United States to pull out because now they can monopolize the international clean energy.
And so here, DR, so I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but that's exactly the question. Why is it that if the United States is not a participatory in the Paris Accords, that Elon Musk's electric cars aren't going to be sold in China? I mean, I guess what I'm wrestling with, and I think I have an answer, but if the United States is cranking out solar panels, they can still sell them anywhere, right? And if there's demand overseas, then the U.S. market would, you know, all of that technology would still be sold and developed here. Or is the absence of the Paris Accord put a damper on the development of clean energies here in the U.S. because the U.S. is like the first adopter market, right? This is where the guy from Somerville, he has an idea, he goes and starts a thing at MIT, he's going to sell in Massachusetts first. Is that the consequence of pulling out of the Paris Accord?
It could well be a consequence. In fact, you can, you know, for all the talk about jobs being outsourced to India, you just think about Trump's withdrawal potentially effectively outsourcing millions of clean energy jobs to India. Because, again, you're right that the demand will go elsewhere because other countries are going to say, you know, why should we invest in clean energy in the United States when the United States government won't support us?
I mean, you're thinking that India will start making its own solar panels because they can't, right?
Exactly.
Instead of buying
them
from the United States. And in the United States, the absence of the Paris Accord and the absence of the Obama Clean Power Plan sort of takes that urgency off the development of clean energy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I don't know. I mean, do you have any, does that ring true to you? I mean, how do you see the economics of the thing working out?
I really don't have a way of analyzing the economics, except so far as economics depends on psychology. And I think this demotivates everybody in terms of focus and intent and concern about climate change and sustainability. I think one thing it's going to do is gut any feeling of enforcement of these kinds of considerations.
Right.
That, you know, we had talked about whether there would be some capacity to look at the industries in the United States that might possibly be causing air pollution and climate change for other countries, and how you might, you know, process that under the Clean Air Act. And this action, I think, completely guts that.
Any opportunity
to do that. If you could get one of the U.S. attorneys interested in doing something about it.
Right, if any of them existed.
If any of them existed, and if Scott Pruitt would ever sign off on any legislation to do anything.
Well, that leads us to, I mean, the other question then, which I think is a fascinating one, is that the legitimacy of sub-national organizations to participate in international treaties. I mean, the thing I heard on the radio this morning was that Jerry Brown out in California, God bless his Jesuit Buddhist soul, is heading off to China to negotiate some sort of a climate deal between California and China, right? And you can easily imagine that the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative here in New England states, especially if it was enlarged to have automobile fuel in it, You know, you could start to put together this subnational group that has some heft, right? If the West Coast and the East Coast got together and decided they were going to live by the Paris Accord, you know, Donald Trump could play golf all day and it wouldn't matter, right? I mean, so Fran, do you have any sense of is Massachusetts able to strike a deal with a foreign country? You know, how does that work? That's what's coming.
It would strike me without looking at a book that it would be unlikely that one of the individual states could independently treaty with a foreign country. I think that's the basis of a republic and a constitution. So I think it's really unlikely.
But could they collaborate? They certainly could collaborate.
They could certainly come to agreements. I'm sure they could come to some kind of agreement. But I can't imagine what force it would have outside the jurisdiction, say, obviously, of Massachusetts. So would Massachusetts and China, I'm sure that California would present a much larger market and be much more of an appealing treaty partner to China than Massachusetts. But
Maybe I shouldn't say treaty. I don't mean treaty so much because the other thing is that, you know, Marty Walsh in the paper this morning was talking about how Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston, has canceled the much ballyhooed cities, the C40, right, which is 40 global cities. We're all going to come to Boston this summer and have a big conference. And of course, the Trump misrule has basically killed that, and so Walters canceled it. But the idea that, you know, Calcutta, New York, Los Angeles could all get together in some sort of, I don't know, quasi-legal grouping has appealed to me. I don't think they could sign a treaty, but it's a way. So, DR, do you think that those people, those cities could have the heft to actually carry anything forward?
I don't see why not. I mean, you know, cities are where the action is. I mean, cities are going to be the main, you know, all politics is local and all climate politics is going to be local in the near term. So I don't see why cities would not be, you know, at the vanguard, at the forefront in terms of reducing emissions. I think they'll absolutely have to be now.
Right. I mean, I guess the point being that I apologize to the audience for leapfrogging all around because, I mean, this is so new and we're trying to figure out, you know, what we think of it. But suppose that a miracle occurred and Hillary Clinton was elected president in 2020. Do you think that we could rejoin the Paris Accord? Let me throw that one at UDR. I mean, do you think, you know, suppose you have a president that's disposed in 2020 to be a participant, he could probably reverse all this by executive order, right?
Yeah, there has been some speculation in that regard, and that would certainly be a bit of poetic justice for all the people who are cheerleading this decision now. Although that does raise the question of if in 2024 you have another denier becoming president, does that mean is this sort of like you know, a climate treaty hokey pokey, essentially? Is that we're looking in for the near very near future?
I mean, I saw a headline saying that the rest of the world is kind of, you know, fed up with it. Clinton was kind of in, Bush was definitely out, Obama was kind of in. Now this idiot is pretty much out, and the rest of the world is saying, "Come on, you guys, make up your mind." And it's
in fact, Brian Deese, I believe is his name. He was a former advisor to Obama. He was on NPR this week, and he was basically discussing the idea that there are some countries who are thrilled that the United States is getting out because the United States has been so inconsistent and has been so unreliable from administration to administration. Mm-hmm. You know, Clinton signed the Kyoto Protocol, but realized if he submitted to the Senate would basically, you know, blow him off. Bush disavowed Clinton's signature of Kyoto. You know, Obama was committed to working with other partners. Trump is now blowing it off. And they're just basically sick and tired of the United States dithering. Right. And basically, they figure that if the United States is out of the way, hey, you know, better for countries that will remain committed, administration in and administration out.
Yeah, let me just put the standard thing up there. This is why you have to get out and vote. We're not telling you who to vote for, but in 2018 and every election from that will end, you need to go vote for whoever you think is the right person to speak on climate. I mean, it's. All right. Well, look.
This is kind of like a wake, Teddy.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I'm not even drinking. I think that this is a yeah, you're right. It's some sort of catharsis. We have to talk about this. People listening to the show, if you've gotten this far, probably care deeply about the issues involved here. They're deep, they're meaningful. There is a sense of grief. There's a sense of loss. There's a kick in the gut. There's a sense of loss of your country and the dignity and honor of your country. There's a grief for the future. We didn't even get into the whole thing about, you know, what these 4 years mean for the climate in terms of carbon levels. It's a real issue, and I think that people, again, who I think listen to this show, probably have to process. And I think we're going to have to process this in more than one show going forward, right? I mean, this is this is just, the initial thing. And so, again, I apologize if we're a little bit rambly, but this... I think let me just close by saying, I think we need to look inside ourselves and figure out what's our reaction. Are we simply pissed off? Are we say that, I think, DR, you said it, you know, is the giant awoken and we're not going to put it down until we get satisfaction and we have some sort of good program? Do you give up and walk away? I don't know. I mean, my own take is, what's your take, Dia? After all this, after, you know, 8 hours after finding the President Confefe having done this, what's your attitude? Are you angry, sad, or what?
What did Peter Finch say in the movie Network? That you got to go out to your window and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, Fran, do you have, what's your feeling?
My feeling is that this was so pointed and so vicious and so cruel and undoing so much extraordinary work that had been set up and teed up to really move forward in these 4 years, and to have him pull the plug on all of it, there's almost an intentional malicious quality. You know how you just sort of get the feeling that they, whoever they are around Donald Trump, want to just kick right in the teeth people who are bright and thoughtful and thinking about these issues. And that's what it feels like. It was almost like there's an intention to batter us emotionally. So I say, let's refuse to be battered. Okay. All right. We're not going away. We're not going away.
Resist.
We are reading carefully. We are following everything. We are paying close attention. We're going to know a whole lot more about the Paris Climate Agreement. And for some reason, it seems like every move of his sort of is counterproductive. And so let's hope so in this case.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. I will try to put up some links. Of course, this stuff's all over the internet. You don't necessarily need to go to our blog. We'll try and put up some links to some of this stuff. The blog, of course, is at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, all those places. Of course, you can find us on iTunes. You can find Fran's podcast on Sisters of Resistance, one word. Go to Stitcher or Podbean. DR, I know that you write for the Washington Monthly, right? You're up there all the time.
Exactly.
So we're going to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, Fran, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Chad.
DR, thank you for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Keep a stiff upper lip. This is only the end of the beginning. Now we're going to have the real fight. Take care, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.